Hi there, this is Nivi from Venture Hacks.
And Naval from Venture Hacks.
And we're going to talk about how to close an angel round, how to put together an angel round, or in other words, how to herd a motley crew of angel investors and turn those meetings that you're getting into money in the bank. And I think we're going to start off by talking about mass syndication, which is an approach that I think more entrepreneurs should be taking to close their angel rounds. I think entrepreneurs make two typical mistakes when they're doing an angel round, and they come from what they've read online about how to close a VC round. So there are two things. One, they don't name drop enough. They don't mention who else is interested. Two, I guess more importantly, they're looking for a lead, which you don't necessarily need in an angel round. And when you put those two together and combine them with a term sheet that you essentially write yourself, you've got a new way to close an angel round, which we call mass syndication, which I've done personally. And Naval, maybe you can talk about how often you see that happening or you don't see that happening or whatever.
It happens fairly often these days, especially the Y Combinator companies, which are well-trained by Paul Graham and crew, will exercise mass syndication a lot. So they take the standard term sheet that they've been given, and they go out and they do a rolling close of various convertible notes. And it generally works pretty well. The keys are you have to set the terms and the valuation very, very reasonably. In fact, you have to probably price slightly below market, because otherwise the angels don't trust you, then they want a lead who's done the due diligence. You have to work with people that you have warm intros with. You have to name drop like crazy, and you have to create forcing functions to get the round to close. You can't give people all the time in the world.
Right. So let's dig into all that stuff. So first off, I think you want to start with a term sheet that you've generated yourself.
I think it's even better to have a term sheet that comes with someone else's authority attached. So it could be one that Wilson Sonsini has put up, it could be one that Y Combinator has put up, it could be one that Founder Institute has put up or Founders Fund has put up. But it's just better to start with a widely accepted circulated term sheet where you can point to and say, you know, dozens of other startups have used this term sheet, it's not new.
Yeah, and then there's the new Series Seed documents from Andreessen Horowitz and Ted Wang and other investors, which we haven't reviewed, by the way, at least I haven't.
Yeah, we're not endorsing any particular set.
Yeah, so I would look at the term sheet first, and I kind of find that a lot of entrepreneurs that I talk to have not really studied the terms that they're signing on to enough, and like they end up using the authority of, oh, it's a Y Combinator Series AA doc, so we're going to use it because everybody else is you use it. I think there's some wisdom in that. At the same time, I really want to understand what I'm signing. I mean, the things that I look for personally in a seed stage term sheet are if you're going to do convertible debt, there's going to be a cap on the conversion price. In the event of an early acquisition, you're probably going to use that same cap to give the investors a non-participating liquidation preference.
Yeah.
You want, if the debt matures before the company is acquired or does another round, you want the equity, the debt to convert into common or preferred stock, and that's at the company's behest.
Yeah.
And I like to have a majority or supermajority of the investors should be able to amend the documents.
Have to vote, have to approve any amendment of the document.
Yeah, they can approve an amendment of the document. So you don't need everybody's approval to make some change,
right,
to extend the maturity date or whatever, or to increase the amount of debt you can raise. Off the top of my head, that's kind of...
Yeah, what's equally interesting, what's usually not in a seed or angel syndication round, what you don't have is you don't have a minimum raise requirement. You don't have usually a board seat or board structure. You often have vesting, but because the company is still controlled by the founders, the vesting is more of a prenup agreement between the founders than it is anything to do with the investors. But generally, you want to keep it very simple.
No option pool, really.
There can be. Actually, I would say that there usually should be.
Okay.
Because you don't want a situation where an investor starts reading the documents, finds out there's no option pool, and therefore it doesn't feel like your valuation is properly represented. Because these days in the market, people are used to seeing an option pool.
Okay. And yeah, with the board seat thing, I think too many seed stage companies probably have board seats, especially if there is a VC involved in the round. You know, if you want some normative leverage on that, you can go to Mark Andreessen's blog, where they write essentially that we don't think most seed stage companies should have investors on their board of directors, right?
Yeah, it absolutely depends on what stage the company's at and how much money you're raising. If you're raising $1 million from institutional investors, you're actually really doing more of a mini VC round than a seed round, so you are going to have a board seat at least, although you probably won't give up board control. On the other hand, if you're raising $250,000 spread across 10 investors, then you don't need to have a board seat, although you may want to have an external board member just to help resolve any founder issues that come up and to get some good advice.
This isn't intended to be a comprehensive discussion of term sheets for seed stage companies, but it's a good start. So I think that's our best advice on the first step, which is generating a term sheet. And you should be able to, when you go into a meeting with any of the prospective seed investors you have, to essentially rattle off the major terms in that term sheet. And I guess the only thing I would add to what Naval said earlier is he described it as maybe the price is below market. I sometimes describe it as price to move. So you want a price where there should be no discussion around the price that you're putting forward. And we've got an article actually that you should look up. It's called something along the lines of, how do I set the valuation on a seed round? Let me look it up right now.
Yeah, valuation is a very difficult topic, especially when the entrepreneur is trying to do it themselves. They invariably get it wrong, and usually it's too high. You just want to talk to somebody who has a lot of data points in the market and can give you those data points.
Right, so you need the market data, and then check out this article we have. It's called How Do We Set the Valuation for a Seed Round? Okay, so at this point you've generated the term sheet. We're going to assume that you've got some meetings lined up, and we'll get back to this topic of how do I get some meetings, but let's assume you've got some meetings lined up. You do the meeting. How do I bring up a discussion of the terms?
I think if the investor is interested as a final step, they're going to ask you. They're going to say, what are the terms, or who's in the round, or they'll ask you, give me some details about the financing. And that's when you basically say, so-and-so is committed to invest. We have a couple of people looking at it. We're hoping to close by such and such date, or we're going to close by such and such date. There's X dollars available, and it's a convertible note, and it's capped at a valuation of X and a discount of Y. So you can just throw the terms out. You can be pretty straightforward with most angels. If you want to be a little more subtle, you can say we're raising X and we're selling no more than Y percent of the company. But I feel that with most angels, you can just be direct and say the cap is whatever it is and just give the number.
Yeah, if they don't bring it up, you should just have a slide that says financing at the end of the presentation, right?
Yeah.
And you tell them exactly what Naval said. You drop the names, and we'll get back into the specifics of exactly how you drop the names. And you discuss the terms, and you discuss them in a way that shows how investor-friendly they are, right? And how sane they are, and frankly, there really should be no room for discussion on them. Not that there's no room, just there's no need, because the valuation is priced to move, and there's a lot of good investor protections, which the only ones they really care about are some kind of liquidation preference in the event of an early sale. They care about getting the same terms as the Series A investors, whenever that happens, which they'll get through convertible debt or through one of the other types of mechanisms in a preferred financing. Like, what kinds of mechanisms?
Yeah, essentially, if it's convertible debt, it'll just convert into the same security as being sold in the next round. If, on the other hand, if the convertible debt has a term sheet attached to it and has specific rights, and those rights will be negotiated. But that's pretty unusual. Convertible debt, usually you just get whatever security in the next round.
No, I meant if like there's a preferred financing in the I guess, I mean, here's the question. Like, what percentage of deals do you see being done convertible in the seed round versus preferred in the seed round these days?
It's about half and half. The larger the round, the closer it gets to just being a preferred round. The smaller the round, the more likely this to be debt. Generally, even on the startup side, it's probably better to do a preferred round because these are the time to set your terms very favorably for yourself, and they form a precedent for what happens when you do later rounds. Whereas if you're negotiating, if your first negotiation is with a VC, you're not going to set yourself the friendliest terms. So there's nothing wrong with doing a preferred round. It's just that the expense is slightly higher, but it's not tremendously higher.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering, is there usually like some kind of most favored nation clause in those preferred term sheets that gets those investors the same terms that happen in the next round?
No, there almost never are, except that there is one game theory element that comes into play, which is any subsequent round has to be approved by the current round investors. So if there's some term that the subsequent investor is getting that the current investors are not, very often they will not approve the transaction unless they get that.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the Series C docs. I think they might not have that in there. I mean, my preference is if you're doing a small seed round under 500K, there should really be no protective provisions, like in terms of vetoing the next round, vetoing a sale.
Well, you kind of have to have some of those because, unfortunately, these are minority shareholders. So you do have cases where an entrepreneur, for example, will raise money from their cousin at a low valuation, or they will sell the company to an affiliated entity. These things actually happen.
Yeah.
And so that's why the investors often need to assure their arm's length transactions or need approval. And that's why you got to know your investors. You got to trust your investors to also do the right thing. People who have a history of investing in good companies and having good exits likely aren't the types who will block financings or block sales.
You can ask them right at the end of the meeting after you've presented the terms what feedback they have on the terms, if any, right? So you should solicit some immediate feedback. My guess is if your terms are structured right, you probably won't get much, if any, but make note of any feedback they give you on the terms. Let's talk about what kind of names you can drop at the end of the meeting.
Yeah, you definitely want to use social proof to build up momentum in closing a mass syndication round. So every angel who signs up, you should make it clear to the other angels this angel signed up. Now, you have to be careful about what the definition of signed up is. If someone says they're interested, don't go around representing them as committed, because the angels will talk, and if they find out that you've been exaggerating or lying, it will cost you trust in the whole financing. Basically, the clear indicator, somebody says, I'm in, and they negotiate an amount with you, and they say they're happy with the terms, and they shake hands on it. If you want to play it extra safe, if you don't have a long-standing relationship with this person, then I would also suggest getting an email confirmation.
Right. So just going from the top of the list, if they've wired the money, signed a term sheet, and the money's in your bank account, you should almost certainly use their name unless for some reason they've specified you can't. Okay, so that's an easy one. Next, if you're in the process of closing with them and you're negotiating a term sheet, I think, again, if they have said that, unless they've said you can't use their name, I think it's extremely safe to say that I am in the process of closing with such and such, assuming they're negotiating the deal with you in good faith. Next on the list, I don't think there's anything wrong with if the angel at the end of the meeting, after you've discussed the terms, has said they're interested, for you to say, are you interested enough for me to tell the other guys I'm talking to that you're interested?
Yeah, it's perfectly reasonable.
That's what I would do with the guys who you're not actively negotiating the deal with them. Just ask them, hey, is it okay if I use your name?
Social proof in a venture round works differently, because in a venture round you want independent bids because you're actively negotiating valuation. Here, because you are setting the valuation, and there's room for multiple players, social proof is much more important than getting independent bids.
Yeah, the advice for an angel round and a VC round, they're exactly the opposite of each other. I mean, another way to test people's interest or to just see how interested they are is to talk to them at the end of the meeting about a dollar amount that they would be interested in investing, one, and then two, whether they would be willing to make introductions to other angel investors. A guy who's given you a dollar amount and is willing to make intros, I think that's basically what I would call the formal definition of a soft circle in an angel round. I guess the third part of a soft circle is they're willing to let you use their name. So definition of a soft circle is, one, there's a dollar amount attached to it. Two, they're willing to let you use their name with other investors. And then three, they're willing to make introductions. If you got all three, I would call that guy essentially soft circle. Now let's talk about, so we talked about mass syndicating the round, and we're not done with that, but what are some cases where you would actually want, or let me put it another way, like where the angels would actually want a lead in the round?
Angels will want a lead if they don't know you and they don't trust you, or if they don't agree with the terms and they want the terms renegotiated but their amount is too low to do it themselves, or if you have a very complex business that requires a lot of due diligence, or a very mature business that requires a lot of due diligence, so someone's going to have to go in there and investigate it, or if the price is just high enough. If you just need to raise a certain amount of money, usually beyond around 500K, I would say, is the upper limit. Then you need an institutional investor, and that person is going to be a lead.
Do you think the majority of financings 500K or lower can be done essentially, are done without a lead?
They certainly can be. I wouldn't say they are. I would say about half and half. It's always harder to do without a lead because you're looking for smaller angels. If you find a lead, it shortcuts the whole process. You'll close much, much more quickly. But one may not always want to find a lead either, because one doesn't want the oversight and kind of that institutional investor mentality that a lead generates, or one doesn't want to negotiate the terms.
Yeah, and I guess just to be clear, we're not saying that you shouldn't find the lead, but I think you want to approach the financing as if you're not going to get one.
Yeah, if a lead steps forward and is willing to negotiate a term sheet and do the bulk of the round or half the round, then yes, you should definitely entertain it. If there's someone you like and trust, they can short-circuit the whole process for you.
And we've got a few articles actually on Venture Hacks. You can look up, how do I find a lead investor? What's the definition of a lead investor? Let me throw one out. They want at least half the round, and often they want the entire thing. If they don't want the entire round, they'll help you find the other investors. They're essentially willing to make the decision for themselves, and in the best case, they're willing to put their money in your bank account and close the deal, even if all of the money is not signed up yet. So I guess I would say if a sophisticated angel investor or even an unsophisticated one at the end of the meeting or an email says, yeah, I'm interested, but I need you to find a lead, I would ask why, and like why they're not interested in participating in the mass syndications, and they may end up telling you one of the things that Naval said, like, for example, they like you, they like the product, it looks interesting, but they don't know the market well enough to make the decision on their own. They don't know enough about the terms, or they don't know enough about you to negotiate the deal with you, or they don't care enough to negotiate the deal with you. They just want to put the money in and not worry about the deal. So just ask why. Don't take, hey, I want you to find a lead as a, it's not a great answer. It's often a way for people to preserve the option to invest in the round, just in case Sequoia decides they want to invest in the round. Okay, after the first meeting, how do we turn all these angels' interest into money in the bank?
So this is a very difficult problem because you have to create a forcing function. And really, there are two forcing functions that work well. There's some artificial or external ones. So it could be the case that your company has some kind of a partnership coming up where you have to make a payment by a certain date, or you're going to go under. So that can create a forcing function, but that's not necessarily the good kind because it gives people leverage over you. The better forcing functions are, there are two of them. One is a time-based, where you very clearly say, we are closing around on such and such date. The notes are all authorized to close at that date. After that date, we will not be able to accept more money. We'll be back to focus on our business. And if we raise less than the maximum amount that we'd authorized, that's fine. We'll just make do on that amount. And when we go to raise money next time, it'll be on different terms. So that is the lesser of the two good forcing functions. And that allows you to at least put a time limit on it. Now, the problem here is you have to be credible, and you have to stick to it, and you have to pick a good time, because if you arrive at that date, with no money or too little money, you will lose all credibility when you go back and ask for more money.
Holidays can be good forcing functions.
That's true. Holidays are very good that way. So you can say, we're trying to get it done by Christmas, before the New Year's, and so on.
By Thanksgiving.
By Thanksgiving. You probably don't want to use ones like, we're trying to get it done by Boxing Day, or something like that, or more obscure. But certainly if there are trips coming up, or if the founders have to go back to the UK for visa purposes for a month, you know, that would be another way to do it. But that's the time forcing function is a lesser of the two. The better one is oversubscription, where it's you basically say we have more people who are interested than we have room for. We like you very much, but we can't guarantee a spot until you're committed. Allocations will be on a first past the post basis, and basically line up more angels than you have room for.
And the third thing I'd add is raise the money when you don't need it. That can be super tricky or perhaps impossible on a seed round where, you know, you're trying to build the product, a team, and get a little bit of traction so you can go to the angels with something other than just a product or an idea with some traction. So it's hard to raise the cash when you don't need it, but if it's possible, I would do it.
Absolutely.
So just very tactically, how do I get the money into my bank account? What I would do, or what I've done in the past, is collect the names of all the people that are interested, have said yes, they'd like to participate in this round, send an email to each one with the term sheet, with the same exact terms that you discussed previously, tell them who else is going to be participating in this round, even if, just as long as the guy has said that they're interested and they're willing to let you use their name, I would list all those people in the email, tell them, here's the day we want to sign this term sheet by, at least put it 2 weeks out, ask them if they have any feedback on the terms, if not, you're going to send them the closing documents. I mean, one, basically, do they want to invest, you know, what's their final decision? Do they have any feedback on the terms? And if not, we'll send you the closing docs.
It can often be a good tactic to send the closing docs through the lawyers, because the lawyers will make it very formal, and they'll put things like, the closing date is such and such date, here are the wire instructions, and that creates an air of authority and formality around it, which helps with the closing.
Yeah, I don't think I would send the closing docs until they've agreed to the term sheet, though, right?
It just seems absolutely. Like a little,
okay, fine, absolutely. Yeah. So don't force the closing docs down their throat. See if they have any feedback on the term sheet. If not, I would just send them the final rev of the term sheet that incorporates feedback from all the investors, as well as the closing docs and the wire instructions all in one email. So this is the second email we're describing now, with, again, listing the names of all the angels who have committed to sign the term sheet now, or have seen the term sheet and approved it. So it's essentially two emails. The first one is term sheet, and please give me feedback on it, with a list of angels who are interested in signing it. Then the second email is, here's the final term sheet, here's the closing and wire instructions, and here's the final list of angels. And again, for the first email, I would set at least 2 weeks out for them to get back to you. Do you think 2 weeks is too long?
Probably. I would just do a week.
Okay. I guess I would do a week. I guess you, I would expect to blow that deadline. In my limited experience, though, and you'll have to send a few emails to these guys, just bugging them a couple times, with, hey, you want to invest or not kind of emails, put it nicer than that. And also always include like a one sentence on something great that has happened in the meantime to the company, just so you can show momentum. This is where the concept of a rolling close comes in, which means that investors don't have to put their cash in all on the same day. All the investors don't have to come in at the same exact time. As they get to your email, sign the docs, get their accountant or lawyer to set up the wire, the money comes in. And that money can come in over the course of, say, a week or two in practice. And you can also set up the documents so that even when all the money's come in, there's still room in the documents to raise another 50 or 100 or another 200K using the same exact documents. So you can do this first rolling close, and then you can do a subsequent rolling close if you find some new investors you want to bring in on these same terms. Have you ever seen this mass syndication approach blow up at the end?
Mass syndication could fail at the end. It would fail most likely if some very high social proof investor drops out. That's probably the single biggest reason it could fail. But it's pretty unlikely because here you have sort of a diffuse group. So it's unlikely that any one person would blow up the deal.
Yeah, it's really a question of how effectively you've read their interest in your round when they say they're interested. And again, I would use those signals that we put forth before in terms of are they a soft circle or not. Did they say you can use their name? Did they talk about a dollar amount? Did you discuss the terms with them? Are they introducing you to other investors? Okay, let's talk about how to get intros to angels. I'll start off.
Angel list,
I guess, is one thing. So we've got a list of angel investors. It's called Angel List. You can contact a lot of the angels directly or through referrals. And then we've got something called Startup List, where you send us your pitch, and if it's a good pitch, we pass it on to the angel on Angel List. You know, when we look at the applications for Startup List, we look for a few things. Social proof, essentially, who have you convinced to let use their name as an advisor or investor or team member? We look for your traction.
We look for your bios, who you are and what you've accomplished. We definitely look at your product if it's a web-based product. We'd like to see the demo or the alpha or the prototype. It's very hard to actually send something out to AngelList without having seen some evidence of the product.
Right. If I had to boil it down to two things, I'd say social proof and traction. And if I had to boil it down to one thing, I'd just say traction.
Yeah, I'd say in order of importance, it's probably traction, then team, then social proof, then product.
Right. And, you know, VCs and other folks like to make fun of people's their advisor slides that they tend to put too much emphasis on when they pitch, which I think is right. But I think advisors and social proof are a great way to get into the door. When you're in the door, I don't think it's important anymore. But it's a good way to get in the door. And by the way, how do you get advisors? Go to events. We recently talked about this thing called Startup Digest, which is the best events in 27 cities or so. It's a curated email list. You can subscribe to that. It's called Startup Digest.
You can ask other entrepreneurs.
And I think we already answered this question a little bit, but what do I need before I raise a seed round? I would say you need your product to have been prototyped in some way or another, and it needs to have been put into the marketplace in one way or another and have some traction.
Yeah, and obviously that differs on the product type. For a consumer web product, you should probably have launched it or soft launched it. For an enterprise product or something that requires a lot of money and a big team to build, you may at least want to test the market demand. I would define traction as quantitative evidence of market demand.
Yeah, that's good. And I mean, look up steveblank.com for customer development techniques. Also look up Eric Ries's blog, startuplessonslearned.com for lean startup techniques, basically how to move your startup, basically get more traction with less work. For some really tactical advice on how to get meetings with angel investors, we've got a whole book on that topic called Pitching Hacks. Look it up. You can buy it for $9. I think it's worth it. You can check out the testimonials from smart guys like Adam Smith, the founder of Zobni, or Aaron Eba, the founder of Etherpad. And the chapter on how to get introductions to investors is actually free online. So you can get the PDF of that chapter for free. If you need money just to get to the point where you can apply to Startup List or talk to angels, essentially to get to the point where you have some product, some team, and some traction, my recommendations are friends and family investors. So those are your actual family. One, two, people who know you and are willing to essentially back you. So it might be a boss that you worked for 10 years and has enough disposable income to write you a check for $5,000 or $10,000 or $25,000. And finally, I guess I would say people who just see the same problem that you have, that you see, and like they believe in the product and the market, like they've had that same idea themselves and they don't have the time to pursue it themselves. But they're willing to put a little bit of money behind a guy who does have the time to do it. I call those three groups of people idea investors. An alternative to raising that idea money is to apply to one of the Y Combinator style incubators, like Y Combinator, Techstars, Dream It. There's a bunch of them now. Just do some web searches. They will back you on the basis of essentially an idea alone. But in general, you need to have a team of people who can get things done, as in you can't be just all business guys. Another option is to keep your day job and do your startup on the side, which you can find lots of great posts on online if you just do some searches. We've got a post on it on Venture Hacks called Half-Ass Startup, written by Tony Wright from Rescue Time. I guess last topic is, what are the differences between, or what are the different types of people who invest in seed rounds? Like, you've got your independent angel investor who's investing his own cash. You have angel investors, or okay, let's call it a seed stage fund, which is investing in LP's cash. They have other investors' cash that they're investing. And that seed stage fund may be represented as a fund, like First Round Capital, or it may be represented as more of a person, like Naval, say.
Yeah, generally, the way a seed stage fund will differ from a pure venture fund is they'll be investing smaller amounts, they will be willing to do convertible debt with a cap, and they also will not require board seats or require heavy oversight. They can also probably decide a lot more quickly. Most seed stage funds, although not all, don't have a concept of a partners meeting. Usually when you're talking to one or two people, you're talking to everyone.
Right. So I guess another example of a seed stage fund that presents as an individual is like Jeff Clavier, say. Is that right?
Yes.
Seed stage funds that present as firms are First Round Capital. Who else?
Founders Fund.
Okay, so I guess I would call Founders Fund, they're more multi-stage, aren't they?
Fair enough. True Ventures.
True, right. And now we're getting to the topic of multi-stage funds. So now you have classic VC funds or new ones like Founders Fund that invest across a broad range from like incubation all the way to Series E.
Right. Charles River Ventures has a very active seed program, all the way from 25,000 to quick start at 250,000 to Series A and Series B.
Yeah, and other firms that don't have specific programs like Sequoia Capital, for example, they do seed stage investments all the time, though they don't have a specific program for it.
Right.
I think if you're talking to any VC that does multi-stage investing, I think you really want to ask them, when was the last time you made a seed stage investment? How many have you made in the last year, essentially? And more importantly, what did the company look like when you made that seed stage investment? Because their definition of what the company looked like may be like 5 million uniques a month coming to the website, and they still call it a seed stage investment, where, you know, while you're struggling to release your product. So you want to ask them, what is their definition of a seed stage investment? I guess I would want to talk about two things. One, what are the things to be concerned about when you start to bring in seed stage firms into your angel round and multi-stage firms into your angel round, one. And then two, how do these firms like to, a lot of them are acting more like angels these days. And let's just talk a little bit about that. But let's talk about the concerns first.
Concerns are, you don't want to have a process as a VC process. So you don't want to go through too many rounds of meetings and due diligence and so forth. You don't want to have governance that's VC governance. So you don't want to give up board control. You don't want to have regular board meetings. You don't want to have to concentrate too much on financials at this stage. And finally, you want to be careful about firms that may have negative signaling value. So people who often do invest in subsequent rounds and sometimes don't. Because if one of those people invests in your fund, in your financing, but then does not follow on in the next round, it can be a signal of death. A death knell to the other prospective investors.
Right. So the ones to worry about most on the signaling value are the multi-stage firms who are investing in seed rounds, mostly to have the option to invest in the next round, and maybe a little bit the seed stage firms that present as firms.
Seed stage firms generally don't
lead or invest in follow-on rounds. So there, it's less of an issue. It's
not more, even for pro rata? I'm talking about like a first round.
Yeah,
or
it depends on the round. It depends on the firm. But yes, for example, first round probably normally does pro rata, so that signal is important. Someone who is investing and doesn't seem to care about the valuation this time, but wants a contractual option to invest in the next round, there you really have to worry.
Yeah, and they don't even need a contractual option. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's just an even stronger signal. If you have a contractual option, they don't exercise it.
I guess the other thing to worry about is if it's a multi-stage firm, if they don't own enough in the seed stage round.
Yes, because then they're going to want to invest maybe more than their pro rata in the next round, and that can create strange dynamics where they're trying to bid your valuation down.
Yeah, the bottom line is if they're trying to increase their percentage ownership in a subsequent round of financing, they have an incentive to drive down your valuation in the next round. You might say, don't they always have that incentive? No. If you want to do your pro rata or decrease your percentage ownership in the next round, you no longer have that incentive. If you want to just do your pro rata, you're indifferent on the valuation of the next round. And if you want to decrease your ownership, you want to increase the valuation of the next round as much as possible. What do you see in terms of just how these seed stage and multi-stage firms participate in terms of leaving room for angels, taking half the round, just participating as like 25% of the round? Just
the good
angel?
Ones will leave room, and it's up to the entrepreneur to dictate. Probably one of the biggest mistakes you can make in doing a syndicate is where you don't leave enough room for individual investors, and you give everything up to one or two lead investors. The amount of help you get out of a person is relatively fixed. There might be slight variations around the edges, but you're passing up most of the advisory benefit of having angels if you don't do a mass syndication to a large group.
I guess another bit of advice I would give is if you're going to raise money from a fund in a seed round that has signaling power in the next round, don't raise money from just one. Get a couple in there.
Yeah, it helps to diffuse that signal.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for listening. Nivi and Naval are signing off, and last plug for our products, our angel list, which is our curated list of angel investors and what they're looking for and how to get in touch with them, and startup lists, which is where you apply to us. We look at your pitch. If we like it, we pass it on to whatever angels you want us to pass it on to, or we'll pass it on to all the angels on angel list if you like. And the metrics on that to date are pretty good. The whole idea is about 5 weeks old. We've had about 25 investors ask for intros. The other cool thing about it that I like is the investors come to you and ask for an intro. But great investors like Jeff Clavier and Anne from Mike Maples Fund, and guys like Matt Mullenweg and John Callahan from True. Just a great bunch of guys are asking for intros. About 15 startups have gotten intros, and we've even gotten one startup funded so far, and probably more coming online pretty soon. And
one that we can talk about right now.
One that we can talk about, yeah, where Matt Mullenweg, the founder of WordPress, invested. And hope to make some more, announce some more success stories about startup lists soon. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.